Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So September begins today. It's going to be a busy month for us. We have transfer window in Serie A till October 5th. The season should start at some point in between that. Today, the big theme of the show is Milan being able to complete the deal for Tonali. Not official yet, but everyone that matters has this as a done deal. So we'll take a deep dive on that. We'll talk about it at the top. We'll talk quite a bit about it in our segment for patrons. And in an interview available to all, I chatted with my friend Daniele Mazzanti, huge Milan fan based in Milan. So we had a really fun chat on Tonali and the rest of the team. So check that out at the end. Before we also have some other hot transfer topics to get to. So I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. Before we start talking about Tonali, and we're going to talk about this from a lot of different angles today, I do want to ask you about the Juve striker situation. Since we last spoke, we have a new candidate in the mix. So aside from what's more likely or not, I want to ask you, out of these three strikers, and there's a few other options, but I think these are the three. Two of them are the likeliest, and one's a more intriguing wild card, but just player ability in general, Alex, when you look at Juve to complete that offense that has Ronaldo and Dybala, if you could take one between Luis Suarez, who's the new name, Edinson Cavani, we briefly talked about last week, and Edin Dzeko, who's already in Serie A, if you could pick one of these to play with Ronaldo and Dybala, who would it be and why?
That's a really, really good question. And there's so many ways to kind of maybe come to your answer. I guess stylistically, like, who plays the best way to work with Ronaldo? But that's tough to answer as well, because it's more tough to figure out what Ronaldo is at this age. We know he's not a classic left winger like he used to be, but he's still not like a true striker. So you can get creative and you can probably go multiple directions on just stylistically, tactically, which one of those three best fits him. And I don't have the greatest answer. I really don't. So I'm just going to come down to personality-wise. Who do I think would just be down to play with Ronaldo and not be into all of the BS? And I'm not saying Ronaldo brings BS. I'm just saying it's not always easy playing with a player of that magnitude. Despite Luis Suarez playing with Messi, I'm going to take Suarez out of this. I'm going to say that maybe Suarez isn't cut out to play with Ronaldo. Maybe Messi and Ronaldo are a little bit different. But also, maybe Suarez just doesn't want to play with another player of that stature. I'm just guessing. This is not a hit to Suarez. I'm just saying, he's done well with Messi. Let's not try and get really lucky that it'll work with another GOAT. Let's take Suarez out of this. Cavani, El Matador. I don't know. I'm kind of down for that. Like, I think Cavani is down to play with anybody. I mean, look at him in Paris. He just played with a bunch of superstars, and sure, he wants to play, but he's not going to be a stranger to that. But I also feel like he's got something to prove. And in a weird way, Ronaldo, he doesn't have something to prove because he's one of the greatest ever. But, you know, he gets to this age and he wants to prove himself. So it almost will be like two badass older players really scoring a lot of goals together. I'm kind of down for that. Then Dzeko, yeah, just doesn't get me that excited. And that's no hit to Dzeko. Like, he's a good player. Has been for a long time. But I don't know. I think doing this process, I stopped on Cavani and really liked that answer. So I'm just going to stick with Cavani. And I don't care how I got to my answer. You heard it live on this podcast. Edinson Cavani is the one I'd want him paired with. That is my take. What about you, David?
Yeah, it's a very intriguing scenario, you know, and I go back to Andrea Agnelli, Juve's president, after the elimination against Lyon, talking about how the squad was really old. And here we are looking at strikers all past 30, some considerably past 30. So before we get to which is the likeliest, these are all intriguing. And I have to say, Dzeko, to me, looks maybe like the safest and easiest pick. I mean, obviously, you know, Serie A, which is a bonus. Cavani does too, but that was a long time ago. So Dzeko's very familiar with the league. I'm a huge fan of Dzeko. I think he's an absolutely unbelievable player. I think he'd open up a ton of space for Ronaldo and Dybala. I think that would work out really well. So I would say that's probably the safest pick, but I'm really intrigued by the potential of the other two. I really see Luis Suarez as potentially being Tevez 2.0 for Juve as far as a player. You know, obviously there's all the Chiellini fun storylines, but aside from that, I think Suarez is an absolute killer. I kind of agree with you. I'm not sure about the fit with Ronaldo, to a lesser extent Dybala, but I definitely get some Tevez 2.0 vibes with Suarez. And Tevez was a hell of a player for Juve. Cavani, look, Juve's been linked to him for a long time. They put in a feeler right now recently. Again, he's saying that, you know, his ties to Napoli would prevent him from playing for another Serie A club. He hasn't signed with another team, came close to Atletico and Benfica. Everything looks set. And then at the last second, his entourage asked for more, or the payment terms kind of became a little more complicated. But Cavani, to me, would be really intriguing. Look, I think any of these would be good choices, but obviously it smacks in the face of the concept of Juve getting younger, especially that front line with Ronaldo being 35. Definitely older. I think the likeliest, definitely Dzeko. As it stands now, there's kind of a domino effect. If Roma can get Milik by offering Senges under and cash to Napoli, get that deal done and bring Milik to Roma, which I think would be a hell of a deal for Roma, then I think Dzeko would go to Juve. Juve's made him a two-year offer. It sounds like Pirlo, Dzeko is his top preference. So I think the deal could happen. We know Juve and Roma have a good relationship. And look, I know the ownership's changed at Roma, but there's definitely good vibes between the clubs. So I could say, I think Dzeko is the likeliest. And I think Milik going to Roma, really underrated move, because I think that's really quite intriguing. It can be their starting striker for quite some time. I like Dzeko at Roma, but I don't think his timeline being that old, and I think the club is trying to, like, in a year or two, really take the next step. So I think this makes a lot of sense for all involved. So I feel fairly confident that we'll see Dzeko at Juve and Milik at Roma. So let's see if that happens, but I'm intrigued by Suarez and Cavani. So let's start talking about Tonali. And I want to start unpacking it somewhat from the Inter angle. So, Alex, one of the storylines that's come up, because essentially Inter didn't really want to pursue Tonali any further. They want more veteran-type players, and there's a lot of people, Inter fans, that are complaining, and to a lesser extent also Skriniar, who's out to be sold. There's a lot of people that complain, look, you know, Conte might not be here very long, we're bringing all these players and we're going to be stuck with him, and these are Conte players, not really functional to our future. Do you think there's some of that at Chelsea still, Alex? Some players that were really brought in for Conte, maybe some of them left, that aren't really functional to the problem long term, and because Conte was so stubborn saying, I want these guys, even though he doesn't have a long shelf life at the club. Do you think there's something to this phenomenon?
It's very interesting. Well, I would definitely say, let me first say that if you have Antonio Conte as your manager and you're going out to buy him players, now he could say that you're not doing a great job at that, but if you're still going out to buy him players, you're probably buying different players than you would if you had maybe just the average Joe as your manager. So it really is, this isn't exactly what you asked, but I have to say this, it really is a danger as a club to back Conte too much. You know, I'm coming with this conclusion right now, because if you back him, unless you're buying just absolute quality, like if you back him buying a Victor Moses, and let's say you spent a little bit, right? Well, then that's not very useful to the next guy once Conte throws a hissy fit and he's sacked. Like, Victor Moses is more useful to Conte. The value levels are different. And there are many players you can make that comparison with. Like, Kondreva. I don't even know necessarily what Conte has done with Kondreva, but just players like that, they're way more of use to Conte than the average manager. So, as a club, be careful when you buy players for Conte, because if he leaves, and he will leave eventually, you are going to be stuck with players that only kind of fit a system. So at Chelsea, I mean, you know, we're trying to get rid of those players right now. And it did leave Chelsea in a little bit of a hole. Like we've been saying, David, as Chelsea fans, when we, and this is probably a strong term, I'm sure you see it on Twitter as well, but fans are like, we got to get rid of the dead wood. We got to get rid of the dead wood at our club, aka players that they no longer have any use for. And it always sounds a bit harsh, but it's quite obvious what they mean. And we have had, of course, Lampard now, Sarri, and Conte before that. And we're still trying to get rid of Conte players. So stuck, you know, the way you phrased that question, David. Yeah, it definitely has a feeling of being stuck with players that were for a specific vision or just for straight up Conte because he wanted them. Now, we were linked with some players that Conte wanted. He didn't get. He was backed to an extent, but not backed a lot. But still, even the players he was backed on have been an issue in our squad now, David. So I guess, like, in answering your question, I came to my own conclusion that if you are a club and you have Antonio Conte as your manager, back him, but just don't back him with anybody. Like, make sure that player has some use to the next manager, because it is really it's a problem if you get such specific players who really aren't all that great, but he makes them great. And that's a compliment to Conte. They're really not that useful if, say, Allegri takes over or just anybody else takes over. So, you know, you said stuck and stubborn. I'm going to say yes, yes to all of this. I believe in this theory. So that absolutely is my answer, David. I certainly think Conte can leave your club in a little bit of a stuck position afterwards. Now, I suspect you're asking, because Inter bowed out of the race for Tonali, leaving him for Milan to take. So just in a hole, because this kind of caught me by surprise. I'm so caught up in my Chelsea world, and now Tonali's going to the other Milan. What did you make of all that?
Yeah, well, first off, I was surprised. And, you know, people that listen to the podcast know that I've been wrong plenty of times and very happy to admit when I do. I got to be honest, I didn't expect Milan to pull this off. I looked at this and, you know, before during the weekend, or maybe it was Friday, Brescia president Cellino said, look, you know, I know Marotta, Inter's director, is very interested. I gave him a break. I didn't negotiate Tonali with any other foreign clubs, but I'm impressed with Milan and Maldini's professionalism, but Tonali wants an answer sooner rather than later. I took that as, you know, basically Cellino telling Inter, hurry up, get this done. We need to get this resolved. I thought Milan was making a good faith effort, but I didn't think they'd ultimately be able to pull it off. But here we are. And look, I go back to this move, Inter deciding to bow out of the Tonali race. And look, there's been different reports. Even Di Marzio talked about how Inter told Brescia they didn't have the money to close the deal. And you got to wonder who gave that information and with what motivation. But in any event, you know, it made me think of Conte's quote from the fall after a loss when he said, you know, well, you can't expect to win when you buy players from Sassuolo and Cagliari. And he was talking of Sensi and Barella. And I took that, oh, Tonali is the new version of this. How can you expect me to win with a player from Brescia? So to me, that struck me as that. Inter is in win now mode. So if I had to talk Inter fans off the ledge, I would say to me, this is, you can look at this as the club going all in to win now. Does someone like Vidal next season help you more than Tonali? Probably. I would say probably. Yeah, there's a good chance that does. So that is kind of the thinking. So look at it more a short term. On the other hand, Inter already lost out on Zaniolo. They had Zaniolo on the team and they offered him in the Nainggolan deal, which now in retrospect, then our friend Bernhard disagrees, but in retrospect, that's a disaster of a deal, still is, in my opinion. So they lost that on Zaniolo. Depending on how highly you think of Tonali, there's a chance that Inter passed on the two generational players for Italy right now. You know, again, there's different opinions on how good Tonali is, but he's definitely a player that has that potential. And I think for Milan, I always say this, you know, I judge a transfer move based on, the club acquiring him, could the player they signed start or play significantly for the teams they're trying to catch on to? That's how I judge a transfer. It's not, oh, I improved my team. Well, what does that ultimately mean? No, it's like I improved my team enough that I'm catching up to other teams. And it's undeniable that Tonali would have a big role on every team Milan is trying to catch up to. So in that sense, great job by Milan. I definitely think there is something to this Conte, you know, being so stubborn. It's stuck. It keeps clubs stuck with his players once he leaves. I think the Skriniar example is probably the most egregious if he does leave, because he's just not functional in Conte's system. But once Conte leaves, you'd probably regret that. The flip side to that is Conte's also gotten a hell of a players at Inter because of how forceful he was with the clubs demanding them. Lukaku, Eriksen, Hakimi, Godin to a lesser extent. So look, there's also advantages to it. So fascinating. And we're going to keep hitting up the Tonali to Milan discussion with our friend Daniele Mazzanti. And if you're a patron, we'll talk about it more. So now, Alex, let's get to some other hot transfer topics. What are we going to cover today?
All right, well, I got my eyes on this one selfishly a little bit, David. First one, will Inter sign a midfielder on top of King Arturo Vidal?
Yeah, so Vidal looks promising. Inter essentially has an agreement with him on a 2-year deal to come back. Now, Vidal is one of those players who's negotiating the rescinding of his contract at Barcelona. Inter's trying to get him for free, has the same agent as Sanchez, so essentially trying to repeat that deal. I do think Inter will sign another midfielder on top of Vidal. They are really looking to change that unit quite a bit. Wouldn't surprise me if Brozovic is sold as well out of that unit. And the two players they're really looking at are in the Premier League, and we've talked a lot about Ndombele, and the other is Kante at Chelsea, who would be a very intriguing move. Let me ask you, Alex, beyond Inter, if you had to put a percentage or a likelihood, you think there's a decent chance Conte leaves Chelsea before this summer, before the new I don't even know what word to say, but let's say this transfer session.
Yeah, it's tough these days. I still don't think it's a high percentage, because right now, especially with Jorginho not with the team, he's had to quarantine, as have many players, after they went on holiday. So not only is Jorginho not part of Lampard's plans, but he's also not even with the team right now practicing, training. Now it's international break, but still, Conte is the full-on 6 DM for Lampard right now. Probably will be. Now, Lampard's long-term plan is not Conte in a lone DM role. He'd like somebody a little bit more suited for that spot, but you don't just throw away N'Golo Kanté. Is there a chance if Chelsea get a good offer he could go? Yeah, and I hate to put percentages on things, and I'll kind of go the David Amoyal way of going hard with my percentage, but don't take it fully serious. I would say that even seems high, but I'll say it. 15% he leaves before the end of the window. Like, that's enough to say that there's a chance.
It is.
But it would really have to be an offer where Lampard looks at the pros and cons and says, all right, fine, the pros still outweigh the cons. The one massive con would be, wow, we just got rid of one of our best players, despite everybody we're signing now. Still, one of our best players, somebody who's so special and unique while the season's going on. And now we have to try and fill in that spot. If they can get a Declan Rice or someone like that, great. But yeah, 15%. Now, long-term, David, it's really tough to know. He's an interesting player, Conte. There's really no one like him. But yeah, it kind of makes sense. Conte and Conte, right? They were pretty good the first time together. Yeah. I'll certainly admit that.
I'll say this, man. I always felt Conte, there's few players that strike me more as a Juve-type player. And, man, would he be great for Juve. But I think at Inter, too, as you mentioned, Conte knows him, would be kind of fascinating. And I kind of agree with your percentage. 15 sounds about right. For my standards, 15 is actually pretty high. So I know. I like how you played that one.
I know it is. 15% from David Amoyal is enough for someone to go buy their kit. Okay.
So, yeah, it is.
All right, let's move on to the next hot transfer topic. Other than Spurs, David, are any other teams linked to Milan Skriniar?
Well, let me begin by saying I continue to be shocked at how little market there is with Skriniar. And the first time we heard rumblings that Skriniar could leave, I don't know, was 5-6 weeks ago. And we talked about on the podcast that I found out that Skriniar had actually been available for a very long time, but no team was making bids. I'm shocked. I don't think there's any player in Serie A whose value has plummeted as much as he has recently. Kind of shocking. And look, you know, you can easily justify by saying he's just not a good fit in the three-man defense, but you put him in a four-man defense, you'd be hard-pressed to find really that many better players than Skriniar on the market. Now, I think Koulibaly is a little bit better. Skriniar is younger, though. I could almost make an argument I'd rather have him than Koulibaly. And anyone who knows how much I like Koulibaly knows how big a statement that is. But there's really very little market for him. You know, in a way, it reminds me a little bit, because maybe the game's playing and so many want to, you know, start the action from the back and have ball possession center backs. Like, it reminds me maybe a little bit of Roy Hibbert, who plays for the Pacers, who was a really valuable player in the NBA. And then everyone went to a stretch five and Roy Hibbert was basically out of a job. And he went from being a top salary to being, you know, minimum wage NBA player. Like, Skriniar in a weird way kind of reminds me of that. But long and short of it, the new team he's linked to is PSG. Makes sense. You just lost Thiago Silva. We know PSG is great with the Italian market. So let's see what happens there. But I remain flabbergasted at the lack of market for Skriniar. And I'm surprised there's not a smart team out there that's really trying to buy him low right now.
All right, first of all, I never thought in my life I would hear Milan Skriniar compared to Roy Hibbert. That is amazing. And I totally get the comparison. So that actually leads me to my question. You just spoke on this, but let me further it a little bit more because I want a better answer when Chelsea fans ask me this question. When they find out Skriniar is available. And like you, David, they're flabbergasted as well because just a year ago, this was like after De Ligt. This was the young defender that every team would be lining up to get. That was the narrative. So is it really the fact that he's more of a classic center back and he doesn't necessarily have the more modern skills? Like, you know, every manager now wants a center back that can pretty much spray the ball with both feet and that can almost be like a midfielder on top of a defender. Is it maybe the Roy Hibbert comparison kind of already gives me my answer, but do you think he's just so a center back and not enough of a modern center back that's why other teams are not that desperate to get him?
Yeah, I got to be honest. Like, look, you know, is he like Bonucci spraying passes? Absolutely not. Is he absolutely dreadful? I think that's a little bit of a stretch. Obviously, De Vrij was always kind of the ball passing center back at Inter. So I remain flabbergasted. I'm trying to spitball and find what I think could be that reason. And I wonder if that's it. I genuinely don't know. And again, how many teams play with three at the back? It's not that many. The vast majority go four. So Skriniar, to me, is a perfect fit on so many teams. So yeah, I think that Roy Hibbert analogy, maybe it's that. I don't know if there's more to it. Maybe he's making big demand salary-wise, but I can't imagine that being what's holding up the deal.
Yeah, just because, you know, I cover a team that's been looking for a center back. We have Thiago Silva now, and that'll definitely be the solution, I think, for a year, maybe one more. But for a team that's looking for a center back and still technically looking for one, you'd think we would at least have 1 week where Skriniar was a name. Like, even silly season gives us a couple random names, and we never even had Skriniar as a name, which is just very surprising. All right, well, let's move on to this. This is another surprising thing. Will Inter still pursue Emerson after completing the deal for Kolarov?
Yeah, so Kolarov all but done to Inter. Again, I go back to Conte saying you can't win with guys from Cagliari and Sassuolo wanting veterans. And here's Kolarov, who's very old. And look, the guy still makes a difference, no doubt about it. Can't really defend that much as a wingback. I have a very hard time imagining Kolarov playing the demanding wingback role for Conte. I see this kind of like more of an insurance signing. So a backup center back and backup left winger. I can't imagine Conte thinks Kolarov can do a full season. So yeah, I still expect Inter to pursue Emerson. Not at the price Chelsea's asking for now. We know Chelsea always asks for a lot. But I do expect Inter to keep looking at left back because, again, if you told me Kolarov was going to four-man defense, could he maybe pull off one more season as a starting left back, starting once a week? Yeah, I can't imagine him doing that on Inter, especially on all fronts.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to keep at it. I didn't bring this to the table, but I think I would ask it anyway. David, please say yes. Could you see Jorginho going to Roma?
Yeah, I got to be honest. I've been getting this question a lot, not just by you. I was just very puzzled. Could I see Jorginho back in Serie A? Absolutely. Are there managers other than Sarri that rate him highly? Yes, absolutely. Roma just always struck me as a weird fit because, A, they are pretty stacked in the midfield. They have Diarra. There really hasn't been legs on the Diarra-Torreira swap. Torreira's closer to Fiorentina. So I don't know. I don't see a natural fit of Jorginho. Roma bringing in a big salary for a player where they're in a role they're already pretty covered. That strikes me as a little bit odd, but I really wouldn't be surprised if Jorginho ends up back in Serie A, probably on a loan deal. Could it be Roma? Maybe, but Diarra would have to be sold first, or, you know, it could be another team.
Well, once again, it's not personal with Jorginho and I, not at all. It's just not part of our future, and we need him out. We need to start selling. We can't do too much more until we have him out. And I just want him to enjoy his football again. It's not like he's 35. He should be on a team where he's important. All right, David, this is a very interesting one. Really interesting. Would Rodrigo De Paul be a big loss for Serie A if he joins Leeds?
Yeah, and first of all, kudos to Leeds having a very impressive transfer.
I hate Leeds, by the way. I just need to say before you even, I absolutely hate Leeds. I know many Chelsea fans do, but also Lampard and Derby County had this huge thing against Leeds in their season in the championship. I hate Leeds. Bielsa, good manager, like he's unique and fun. I think he's a prick. I can't stand Leeds. I hope exactly what happened to Fulham a couple years ago. They got promotion. They bought a bunch of players. It didn't work out well because they just randomly bought a bunch of players. I hope that happens to Leeds. Sorry, David.
Love it. Well, I'm pro Leeds. I have a ton of new Leeds followers who are really desperate for info on the poll. But I love your passion, Alex. I'm going to be somewhat in favor of Leeds. Look, I'm a big DePaul fan. I think he's become really one of the very underrated and complete Serie A midfielders. You know, started more offensively as a pretty complete player. Now, you know, I think there are definitely some Serie A clubs, if DePaul goes to Leeds, that will have some big regrets. And Udinese already lost Fofana, by the way. Interesting to see if they also lose DePaul, who to me is definitely ready to leave Udinese, been there long enough. But they've also lost Fofana. So I know there's rumors they're going to bring Pereira back from Watford to replace him. But those are some big losses. And look, I think DePaul on Leeds would be a really, really nice move. This is a guy who plays regularly for Argentina, has absolutely cemented his status as one of the top midfielders in Serie A. Another reason why I think to leave is his salary not in line for someone that plays regularly for Argentina. He earns 1 million net, which for Udinese is a lot. That's nowhere near what someone of his caliber should make. And now the question remains, you know, is the Premier League in and of itself, a team newly promoted in the Premier League, a bigger jump for DePaul compared to Udinese? Probably. But again, I remain surprised. Like, I think at Juve, he'd be a very intriguing player for them. So let's see what happens. But right now, I think Leeds fans should be cautiously optimistic about this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to back off my energy. I said this coming season, I'm definitely going to be a little bit more bold. Still true, but bold. I will admit, isolated, that's a nice little signing. That is a nice little signing for Leeds. I just really hope they get their dose of medicine that, in my opinion, they deserve. Let's move on to the last one. David, which mid-table team are you most impressed with on the market so far?
I think Cagliari has done some nice moves. I like, in general, the direction of the club. So for the third window in a row, they sign a very promising midfielder So they just signed Marin from Ajax, who I've heard good things about. They had previously signed Pereira in January, and he played well for them. And then they had signed Nandez last summer, trying to keep Nainggolan. They brought in Di Francesco. You know, jury's still out, at least for me, on Di Francesco. But I certainly like what they're doing on the market. They're going to have a nice midfield. They also kept Rods. They had the option to buy him from Napoli. So I kind of like what Cagliari is doing. Okay, before we get to Daniele Mazzanti, and we'll take another deep dive on Tonali and Milan in general, let's get to Patreon. If you enjoy Calcioland, I can't recommend enough becoming a patron, especially in September. We'll cover transfers deep. You'll have access to my transfer rumor raider column if you pick a certain tier in patron. We support a great charity. We're going to make a big donation today to the Insuperabili, which run a nonprofit in Italy. They have football academies for kids with disabilities. They do great stuff. We're going to make a nice donation thanks to our patrons. Today, you get to ask me questions and you get longer versions of the podcast. We typically do a bonus interview every week and you get a long extra part of the podcast. Today is going to be extra long. It's kind of like a second podcast as well. So if you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. Okay, I am very excited to talk about Milan. They were on my list as a team we had it to get to. We're recording this Monday morning. Tonali is all but done, and I'm very excited to welcome back for his second appearance on the podcast one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter, Daniele Mazzanti. On Twitter, you can find him at Dan_Maze. Mazzinho, really one of the best accounts if you're into calcio. We talked last time he was on. He has an awesome podcast in Italian. Often you guys ask me for podcasts about calcio in Italian, and Vox to Box, that Daniele is one of the numerous hosts, is fantastic. They are on hiatus now, but coming back in 2 weeks. So check that out. So Daniele, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back and to chat calcio with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me. And it's always a pleasure for me to be your guest.
Fantastic to have you back on. So Daniele had a nice summer, spent some time in Sardinia, back in the region of Milano. So I know yesterday, pretty much everyone that's plugged in with transfers has Tonali going to Milan. I have to say, just like me, I know you were pretty skeptical just reading your tweets, because I have to say everything felt like Cellino, Brescia's president, was maybe trying to tell Inter, hurry up, sign the player. He doesn't want to wait anymore. I told other teams no. But Milan gets it done. So let me ask you, were you surprised that Milan closed the deal for Tonali?
I was. I was totally surprised, and I still am surprised about it, because I generally thought that that was a move from Cellino, like, come on, Inter, hurry up!
Yeah.
You can see AC Milan is here, and he wants the player that is promised to you. But wow, Tonali will become an AC Milan player, and I'm really surprised about it, because I never thought that AC Milan could take one of the best young talents we have in Italy right now. I'm not a super huge fan of Tonali, but I really like him as a player. And of course, he's a Rossoneri supporter, so
yeah,
that's a good thing for us. we have this motto of in Milan, I Milanisti, so
yeah.
AC Milan to AC Milan fans, and that's really good for us, because it's also a move. It's also a thing that is like I didn't think that AC Milan was able to do, because a profile like Tonali would have been perfect for Inter, as Barella was. It would have been perfect for Juventus, like Kulusevski or a few years ago Bernardeschi, etc. So I was surprised because it was from since the time when AC Milan bought Romagnoli that AC Milan didn't buy one of the best young players in Italian scenario. So let's hope. I used to talk about new player as soon as I see the sign on the contract, because I don't want to be upset about anything in the world. So I used to wait to the official thing, but it seems that tonight he will be an AC Milan player, and I really hope he will choose the jersey number 8 of AC Milan as his idol Gattuso. So that would be really, really perfect.
Yeah, very well said. You know, what stands out to me, it's a great signing because Tonali could play pretty much at every team that Milan is trying to catch up to, right? I mean, would he be a definite starter? Maybe not, but he would definitely play a lot at every team Milan's catching up to. I always say that's how you bridge the gap. It's not necessarily improving your team. You have to catch up to those above you. And you said it, it's very interesting because Tonali could have definitely been a starter at Juve, played at Inter, played at pretty much any team in Serie A, and that's the advantage Milan usually has, is they can offer a starter's job, and here they didn't have that advantage and they still sign him. So very impressive. So let's talk about the midfield and how he fits in, because especially post-COVID when Calcio came back, Milan's midfield was a huge strength. We had Bennacer, who I think really had a strong first season at Milan, and for Tonali, that's a great sign. You watch Bennacer's improvement. We also had Frank Kessie, who I thought played much better in the second half of the season. And we'll get to in a second Bakayoko as well, who I know you're familiar with. So Milan's going to have a nice midfield. And Pioli said he wants 18 starters, so here you go. So tell me, how do you think Tonali fits into the midfield at Milan?
Well, I think that if AC Milan will be able to have both Tonali and Bakayoko alongside with Bennacer and Kessie, I think that AC Milan could have four different midfield, like a big rotation between these four midfielder, because Pioli want to keep the team with these 4-2-3-1 plan, and I think there are two spots for midfielder, and we are going to have four potentially starter in that role, and this is amazing, I think, in a certain way, because we are going to have, I hope, three different competitions this year.
Yeah.
Let's see if AC Milan will win against the Shamrock Rovers and the other teams in Europa League. And but the only thing that I'm a bit worried is I really rate Bennacer. I think that he could become really a top player for Serie A, and I hope that he can keep his spot as a starter in the Serie A campaign. Yeah. But I'm totally fine with what Pioli said. Like, he needs 18, 17, 15 starters. So Tonali and Bakayoko are two players that are going in this direction. Like, we can imagine a midfielder with Bakayoko and Bennacer, or Bennacer and Tonali, or also Bakayoko and Kessie, and Tonali and Kessie. They are players that could play one with each other. Depends on the It depends on the game and depends on the skill of the other team, etc., etc. So I think that is really good for AC Milan because in the last years we had so many troubles in that role, in that part, in the zone of the field. Like we had Biglia, who was pretty useless in his journey with AC Milan jersey. We had players that try to play in that zone of the field, in that roles, like Çalhanoğlu is not a midfielder, is a trequartista, and we saw how he can play if he's free to play in the way he know how to play, or also Bonaventura, who is not proper midfielder. So right now we have four players that can play in that two spots, and that could be really good for them and for the team.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about Bakayoko. And yes, totally agree. Tonali's arrival does not stop Bakayoko for coming back. He's definitely on his way back to Milan. You're familiar with it. You often go to games in person. It wasn't that. I mean, although life's been so crazy, it feels like a long time ago that Bakayoko was at Milan, but it really wasn't. So tell me how you remember Bakayoko as a player, and what do you think he can bring to this team?
So I remember pretty well Bakayoko in his new jersey because I really like him in his first and only at the moment season with AC Milan, and I remember he started like it was a nightmare. I remember I was at San Siro. It was at San Siro watching the game between AC Milan and Olympiacos. It was Europa League. And he seemed like a player who doesn't know how to play proper football. He was a nightmare. But then, like for the first 2 months, he was terrible, really terrible. But then he switched. Like I understood that he's a player that need some confidence and need to be loved. Like he needs to be relevant, to be important for the team, loved by the fans. It's all a mental thing for him. And so he switched, and he became pivotal for AC Milan because he was like a sort of a wall in the middle of the field, and he played great football for AC Milan till the moment where he fought with Gattuso, who was the trainer, and he finished his first season at that moment. But for like 5 months in that season, he was probably the best player of AC Milan.
Yeah.
So
I think
that Bakayoko could bring that defensive side in the midfielder that neither Bennacer and Cassie have right now, and it's quite strange to think about, because of course if you think about Tonali, you are going to think about Pirlo, but they are two completely different players.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tonali is more defensive than both Bennacer and Cassie, in my opinion. So we can do a midfielder with Bakayoko and Tonali, who is really defensive, but also is a midfielder that can start the action from the defensive side and turning into the offensive side really quick, because they are quick, I don't know how to say in English, veloci di pensiero, però, but
thinks quickly, someone who thinks quickly,
they both think quickly. So I really appreciate how Bakayoko was able to turn his terrible season in a very good season that year, and I hope he could come back here in Milan and do basically the same. The only thing that I'm not so sure about Bakayoko is that he used to play in a midfielder with two teammates at his side. So one on the right and one on the left. And right now the midfielder is set on two spots and not three. So this is the only thing that I'm thinking, well, is Bakayoko the right guy to play in a midfielder with two spots? I don't know. Pioli probably will know it. I will know it. I don't know right now, but I certainly hope.
Absolutely. Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about another addition who could be coming in. We know Milan has targeted a new offensive player. Brahim Diaz seems very likely to be coming to Milan. The formula probably a loan with option to buy, with Real Madrid having a counter option to buy. But regardless of the formula, I know you're an astute observer of football in general, besides Serie A too. Are you intrigued by Brahim Diaz potentially coming to Milan?
Yes, I think that he's a player that AC Milan, he's a kind of player that right now AC Milan had not in his roster, because, he's short because he's like 1.70 meters, I think. But he's really quick and he's very skilled. Like, his dribbling is tremendous. And he's a kind of player that AC Milan right now had not in their roster. The most similar player is Castillejo, but yeah. It's also different because Brahim Diaz is that kind of player that could one versus one easily and create a spot where AC Milan could go like three against two or four against three, while we are going when we are attacking, and it depends about the formula, because of course if Brahim Diaz will come to Milan with a loan with a option to buy, for me is a very good sign, and we can hope that he could do really well in Serie A, because he's really fast for Serie A standard.
Yeah.
As we spoke about De Lofeo in the last time I was your guest, and if the formula is a dry loan, I'm not so fun about being a sort of satellite club, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a thing.
But I really don't like the formula of dry loan. But in this case, I think that a loan with option to buy is perfect for AC Milan. Probably AC Milan needs someone on the right wing who can be like the star of the team. We need to upgrade that spot, but I don't know if they will be able to do an operation like that in that zone. And Brahim Diaz is perfect to be the subs of Çalhanoğlu, of Rebic, or Castillejo, because he can play with both feet. It's like with right and left, no problem for him. So I think that could be a good player for AC Milan. Most probably not a game changer, but it's a good option.
Yeah, and I hear you that you don't want to develop a player for another team. On the other hand, I'm of the opinion, you know, Milan just needs to get back to the Champions League, and then good things can happen. So. Yeah, I hear you. But if he helps you get closer to that, so be it. So you said at the top, and I have to say, this is interesting because you told me, you know, you were afraid to jinx Tonali. It's not official as we're recording. The last time I had you on, we were talking about Rognich and it didn't happen. Yeah. So tocca ferro, tocca whatever you need to, so we don't repeat that. But let me ask you this. I know you were disappointed because you were very excited by the Rognich project and you had concerns about Pioli and what we saw from Milan in the post-pandemic culture, which, you know, we can debate if that's real culture or not. But now that some time has passed and Milan is supporting Pioli on the transfer market, how disappointed are you that Rognich isn't at Milan and Pioli stayed on?
So right now, I'm no more disappointed. I admit I was very disappointed about it. Then I realized that probably the main thing was that there was not time to do that revolution because the season is starting like in 2 weeks. And if you want to bring Rangnick in your team, he needs time because he wants to do his revolution. So he wants to change the board operation, the board operation, and the team and the staff, etc. So AC Milan did not have time to do that revolution because this season is so compressed. Like this off season is probably the shortest off season ever, because the team is already working for the preseason, and so time was the thing, and I have to say I'm happy for the board of operation, like for Maldini, for Massara, etc., because I thought they deserve to keep their job because they made just one huge mistake last year, and that mistake was Marco Giampaolo. But if you think about their work, they choose Fernandez, who is like the best player in the team. They choose Bennacer, who is one of the other best players in the team. They choose Rebic, who is another of the best players in the team. They bring back Zlatan. And so, talking about players, they choose Kier. And I was really surprised because I never think that Kier could play in that way. And Kier was really good in the post-pandemic, post-hiatus status, or I don't know how to spell in English, hiatus period. Yeah. And so they talking about players, their only mistake is Duarte.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that you even didn't remember his existence, but yes, Duarte is probably their only mistake talking about players, so they deserve to keep their job, and I'm happy that this is not another year zero for AC Milan. Like, this is year one, so we have already start to build something. So keep going with this project is a good thing for us. So if we want the revolution, maybe we are going to have this this revolution the next year. This year is quite good. Is both also Pioli deserve to keep his job, and let's hope. I don't think that he's the trainer who can bring AC Milan to the next level, but certainly I hope so. Forza Pioli, and let's hope about it.
Yeah, maybe he can ultimately do what Spalletti did for Inter. I would think that's kind of the goal. So you just mentioned that, you know, Milan has a very good track record with players, and I think that's very fair. So it sounds to me you have more confidence in Maldini Massara, who's done a good job behind the scenes. But let me ask you in general, so you can definitely address them, but, you know, the Elliott Fund, and I remember Gazzidi's favorite famous interview from last year where he laid out the vision, which is to buy young players with some track record, but guys that can become stars at Milan or become future plusvalenza. And Tonali absolutely checks that box. So tell me a little bit. It sounds like you're more confident in Maldini and Massara. Do you have a little more confidence in the Elliott Fund right now based on the Tonali acquisition?
So I think that you can do your you can judge the job of Maldini and Massara without thinking that their work is going under the direction of Elliott and Gazzidi. So I'm happy that they are going to choose and pick the best young player they can. I'm also sure that with only young player, it's really difficult to have some results, because both AC Milan and Elliott need that AC Milan come back to the Champions League. Is the main goal. It's the only thing, because it's like maybe the first thing is the new stadium, and the second thing is come back to the Champions League. And with only young players, it's really hard. It's really tough to go to Champions League, because you have to fight with Atalanta, with Lazio, with Napoli, with Roma, etc. So it's really tough.
It is.
I like this philosophy. I spoke like months ago with friends of mine who is a scout for AS Roma. He talked me about Leao, because I didn't know how Leao was. I asked him like, how's Leao? How is he? Is he good? Is he good, or stuff like that? And he said, okay, Leao is one of the best player born in 99 in Europe. Like, Elliott and AC Milan are trying to buy the best they can get. Of course, they are not at the level of Jadon Sancho or Haaland, or they are already superstars. You can get superstars right now. And the main thing is that the AC Milan fans know it. So we are good with this philosophy, because we understand the situation, but we need to go to Champions League. And you can't go in Champions League with only players who are 20 years old. Tonali is a great, great, great player for AC Milan in this moment, but he's not enough. Like, we need some like a player as Rebic. Rebic is like 20, 26, 27 years old. You need that player. You need the player who has the players who have the experience at the main of the top level in European football. So let's hope. I think that AC Milan right now is we were sixth in the last Serie A. Right now probably we are sixth again, because Napoli is
going to be stronger
than last year. Yes, I don't know if Roma will be the same, or probably they are going to change their roster a lot. So maybe they could have some troubles. I don't know if Lazio will be able to do the same with the Champions League. So with three competitions for the next year. Probably AC Milan is in the same situation, in the same position that we were last year. But we are so young as a team that 1 year could, 1 year more could make the difference in terms of experience, in terms of leadership, and stuff like that. Like last year, Bennacer, who is probably the key player, came from Empoli that were relegated. So right now he's another type of player, another Bennacer player. So let's hope if they grow, all together, that would be good for AC Milan, also yeah. For me, and so for us. Let's hope about it. I stopped to dream big, and it's a pity because I used to dream big about my team. I have like the best youth possible, but right now I'm I have to be realist. Like the reality right now is that AC Milan have to gain that spot in Champions League. That for us is totally. It's the only goal of the season.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree with your perspective. The top of Serie A is definitely strong. Napoli absolutely look like a team that are going to be challenging for the top four. And really only Lazio look like they'll take a step back. I think Milan's definitely building well for the future. So I want to ask you about one more thing. I know you are very passionate about kits, jerseys. I love reading your tweets about it. And I know you were a little bit concerned about Puma taking over for Milan, but I think overall they've done a very nice work at Milan. So tell me a little bit, what do you make about the new kits Puma has made for Milan? And in general, how Puma has done with Milan the few years they've been with the club.
So, if this episode would have been registered like yesterday, I probably told you like this year is the best year ever for the AC Milan jersey. The pity is that. This morning in Italy, so tonight in the US, there were leaks about the next away kit of AC Milan, and it's probably the worst away kit I ever seen of AC Milan, because the away kit of AC Milan needs to be white. It's like mandatory. It's mandatory. Like this, the away kit is white. You can put some red and black around the jersey, but it's mandatory that it's white. And the kit for the next year is a lot. There's a lot of red over that kit, and it looks like the logo of Windows 95. I don't know if you remember that logo, but there are these squares around the jersey. They did an awful job for the away, but they did an astonishing work for the home kit. Yeah. That is one of the best kits for AC Milan that I ever seen, because they dare to do something new, but something related to our beloved city. And, and that is an AC Milan jersey. So they dare to do something new, but, on an AC Milan jersey, because we need the stripes, red and black. You can mess with this red and black thing. You can mess with the wrong red or the wrong black, etc. And also, I'm a huge fan of the third kit of AC Milan.
Yeah, it's very nice.
It's really nice. It's really elegant. And so, of course, it's positive. My personal judgment for this season is positive, because the main thing is the home kit. The home kit needs to be good. Then we can talk about the away kit and the third kit, etc., etc. I was terrified when AC Milan signed with Puma, because I was thinking about the work that Puma did for example, national team from Africa.
And yeah.
Puma used the same template for every single nation, just changing the colors, et cetera, et cetera. And I was terrified because I didn't rate Puma as a top level, but I have to say that the general work that Puma did for AC Milan is very good. It's far better than what Adidas did for AC Milan in the last years, except for the very last year where Adidas create two beautiful kits for AC Milan, both home and away were perfect from my point of view. But in general, the last years, Adidas did a lot of terrible kits for AC Milan. Also, the home kits with this terrible tricolore everywhere. There is no reason to put the tricolore everywhere on your jersey if you're not the champion of Italy, right? And yeah. Stuff like that. So in general, Puma did really good for AC Milan, and in general, in the last 2 years, you can see that Puma was able to go on the next level, because I'm thinking about what Puma is doing with the Nazionale, with Nazionale Italiana. We have the first kit that is new, is like brand new kit. Is they showed us today the home kit. It's perfect. It's brilliant. The second is really good, and the third, that is the green jersey, I think is the best jersey that Nazionale I've ever had, because it's gorgeous. It's very brilliant. It's a piece of art. And I'm thinking also what Puma is doing with Manchester City.
Yeah, beautiful.
Here have a beautiful, beautiful home kit with this mosaic from Manchester. And it's a brilliant kit. The second is one of my favorites, because it's just perfect. And the third, it's really strange, the third one. But I love the thing with the Britpop and the story behind the jersey. So Puma right now is doing very, very well. And I'm happy that we are going to have this sponsorship with Puma also for the next year, I think, or also for the next 2 years. And another thing that Puma was important and relevant for AC Milan is that Puma is linked with Rock Nation because of Jay-Z. And Rock Nation is very important. The partnership between Rock Nation and AC Milan is very important for AC Milan, because we are going to see more and more athletes on the other side of the ocean, and hip hop stars and pop stars, etc., etc., wearing the AC Milan jersey. And in this time, this kind of popularity on social networks, etc., etc., it's like scoring a goal. So for us, it's very important, this partnership. And we have to thank Puma, because of Puma, Puma and Rock Nation are linked. So let's go, yeah. Puma.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, you're definitely passionate and very knowledgeable on jerseys. I like it. So real fast, let me ask you this. Of the other Serie A teams, any other kit that you really like? We know some of the Audi every year has the best kit, in my opinion. They don't have to change anything. But other than that, any other kits you really like for next season?
I think AS Roma have two brilliant kits, both home and of course away is a piece of art, because I like the clean jersey with something related to the history of the club, and they have the walls on the chest and this color that is cream, is not white, it's cream, and it's a beautiful kit made by Nike. And also the first kit of AS Roma, when I saw the first images, I was not a fan of that kit, but when I saw the impact that kit has on the field, I really appreciate that kit. So I think AS Roma will win the Scudetto of jerseys this year.
Yeah,
I also think that the home kit of Inter is really good. It's a beautiful jersey, but I think that if Puma did a thing like that, talking about my stripes, I think that I'd been really upset about it, because you can't mess with stripes and stuff like that. But it's a beautiful jersey, but it's not a beautiful FC Internazionale jersey, because you can mess with the stripes, but the colors are perfect. The impact is really good. The away kit of Inter for the next season is probably one of the ugliest kit I have ever seen, and it will be a really tough fight between the away of AC Milan and the away of Inter.
Yeah, I was going to say
for the title of the worst kit in Serie A, and the Juventus kit. I'm not a huge fan of what Adidas is doing with Juventus, because they are trying to change every single year dramatically. Like, the changes are huge, because last year it was two sides, one black and white. But now we have stripes, but stripes that are fading and they are looking like paint. Etc. So I'm not a huge fan of Adidas works for Juventus, and Puma also became the sponsor of Sassuolo, and for the next year Sassuolo will have the home jersey, who is really similar to the jersey that AC Milan had last season. So with tiny stripes. Of course, green and black, because the next year, I think, is the centenary of Sassuolo. And so that could be a really good kit. And of course, Napoli kit pays
the sponsor.
Like, I'm because of my interest in the jerseys, I'm the man in Italy who hates most Aqualete. You can find, because it's like I want to think about myself as an esteta. So I'm looking for, I'm in the search of the beauty, the beautiful, the beauty in the world, and you can't have a red sponsor on a blue jersey. A light blue jersey. You can't. You cannot. It's the worst. Please do something about it. Because if you see the work that editors and graphics do around the world on the Napoli jerseys, where they just switch the color of the sponsor from red to white, the jersey is beautiful. The jersey is perfect. And they keep that thing red, so it's ugly. And till the moment they have that sponsor, the jerseys will be terrible.
Well, Daniele, one thing that is not terrible, quite the opposite, is when we chat culture with you. It was a real pleasure to have you on. Great to get your perspective on Tonali, Milan, and the kids. We should do a whole podcast. on that. Definitely, once Vox to Box comes back in a few weeks, for those of you learning Italian, check that out. And we look forward to chatting during the season with you again, Daniele. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.